three.
Two.
One.
Welcome to the Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 8-1, which means no checkpoints, people. If you tune out, you'll have to start the podcast all over again. So let me introduce my band of merry mischief makers. First up is the Desert Hawk, Sage Samarage, Morris Green.
Hello.
You know why you're the Desert Hawk?
No, I was going to ask.
You got the Mohawk, and you live in the desert of New Mexico.
Ah, we have a Desert Eagle and a Desert Hawk.
Yes, that's right. We're going with sophisticated humor this week. And bringing some of that, we got the Blues, a.k.a. Eric Blue Swim, repping the home of country music and finger fretting.
Well, we're off to a good start on being...
I slipped. Pardon me.
I believe I heard the phrase mischief makers, so I've decided I'll say shake shake while holding my pinky out.
Oh, God, it's so tempting. And you might know me, Robert Desert Eagle Allen, bringing the sophomore humor. I've written a few video game reviews over the years. And speaking of games, did you guys play any this week? Start with Blue, so I hear some silence. Blue, you've been playing.
Well, basically...
With your pinky.
Pinky only.
One thing I've been playing with just my pinky, and that is Lunar Legend for the Game Boy Advance.
Okay.
I got Lunar 2 last week, and I completely forgot about it, but I found the, I guess it's a remake, re-envisioning, port, whatever, of the first Lunar game on the Game Boy Advance. And I sort of got interested in it when I got it. I got it at GameStop when they were clearing out their GBA games or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got sort of interested in it, but I really didn't stick with it for more than maybe 15 or 20 minutes because I just felt like there was a lot that was lost, you know, between the PlayStation version and the GBA version. The music didn't sound nearly as good. I think there's, like, supposed to be, like, some dramatic opening scene where you first see Luna, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, like, singing in, like, this, singing on a lake or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just a still screen, and, like, you hear this really heavily distorted... And it's just...
Wow, yeah. that seems terrible.
And I kind of lost interest in it soon after that, because I've wanted to play the Lunar games, but I kind of felt that I wasn't doing my desire to play the series... Right. Justice by playing the GBA game. But when I found Lunar 2, found that in my GBA games, and I found Lunar Legend in my GBA games. And so I decided, well, if I have Lunar 2, I should probably play the first one, and since that's probably the only way I'm going to play the first one, you know, barring some random streak of luck at a thrift store or something like that. So I started playing that a bit, and I'm about an hour and a half in, and I do wish it was on the PlayStation. The audio isn't anywhere near where it should, where I was expecting it to be, or hyping it up to be, or whatever. But I'm enjoying it. I mean, it feels like an SNES RPG, something of that era.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm only about an hour and a half into it. But I've been through the, I can't remember, it's some sort of like a forest or something like that.
There tend to be a few forests in RPGs, aren't there?
Mm-hmm. I will say that there is one feature I love about Lunar Legend. I guess it's probably the Lunar series, if I were to take a guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's that you can auto-battle.
Okay.
You know, because there's a pretty decent amount of random battles in here. I mean, feels like it's a little more than like...
I was going to say Dragon Quest.
I have Dragon Quest 4 for the DS, but I really never played it enough to really compare. It's like I found that on clearance too, and I played an hour of it and lost interest in it. I have gamer ADHD. I love the auto battle because it's just one press, they do the work, and I just sit back and relax.
Doesn't that take something out? Because one of the, I don't know, core elements of any role-playing game is the combat.
In this case, it feels okay because, you know, I've, you know, leveled up my characters a bit. I think when I went into the forest, I was like level 1 and I was up to like level 7 or 8 or something like that. So after a decent amount of time, you know, it's like the battles start getting kind of repetitive and, you know, you're just kind of ready to auto-grind it, you know, because, I mean, it's like you'll walk maybe 3 seconds, if that, and you'll get hit with another random battle. And it's just like in the first forest, whatever, you have to find these 3 tablets that are scattered throughout the forest, and they each have a different phrase on it.
Okay.
And you have to have all three phrases and then go to this one door in the top left section of the map, and you have to put them in the right order to basically Alakazam, Alakazoo, open the door type of thing.
Right. There's the door.
Sorry.
That was the third phrase right there.
But, it's not the lunar experience I was wanting, mm-hmm. but I'm enjoying it. I'm hoping my gamer ADHD won't kick in again.
Boom. Speaking of woods, I've been stuck in the woods a little bit this week. So first up, let me talk about my brief experience with Call of War as the Cartel, which I requested for review when it came out, or actually before it came out, but I didn't get it. So that was kind of the first time I dodged the bullet. Then Gison Gacho and Anthony DiCiccio, they tried to stop me from renting it, which was my second evasion. So, ignoring their sage advice, I went ahead this week and I red-boxed it. Needless to say, I turned it in long before the 9 p.m. due date. It's not that the Cartel is horrible. I broadly put it on the same level as Haze. I'm not sure if you guys remember that old PS3 FPS.
Well, didn't you have like some control of time or something in that game?
The way you could see enemies, you had the certain vision. It had a number of gimmicks, and then it kind of took them away there. When you were on the drugs, you had the gimmick, and then when you kicked the habit, that could be a spoiler. Later, it kind of took them away. So the game opens with this on-rails chase scene, tries to be, you know, Bruckheimer-esque, Bruckheimer, Michael Bay-esque. So you have these
explosions.
Yeah. So you have these SUVs which are firing at the player's car, and you really can't see anything but the muzzle flash because everything is just washed out and drab. So you have to go by your indicator. And so the player, and from there, you have these two AI partners, and you wander through this marijuana plantation, which is in the middle of a national forest somewhere in California. Mm.
Nice.
Yeah, which I'm trying to find. Now, while the enemy AI is okay, they take cover behind trees and they run around if you flank them. The game's choice of weaponry is kind of puzzling. So they give you two pistols and a submachine gun. With the pistols, you can even do dual wield. Now, the problem is, if you are looking down the sights of a gun, the submachine gun is always more accurate. Since there's no scarcity in ammo, you know, I rarely use the pistols, favoring either an MP5 or some kind of assault rifle. I mean, it's not a deal breaker, but it is something that kind of, you know, makes you question what was going on during the development process. Next up, let me talk a little bit about repetition. In the first game, there's these tents that are filled with, I guess, Mary Jane packets, which you simtext to Holy Hail. Now, it's cool enough the first time, but when you're doing the exact same thing to the ninth tent, and then watching your players just this arming, when he arms the detonator, this animation routine, it looks like he forgets the code twice. You know, he's punching in 2-1. What was the next digit again? Okay, 7-3. I forgot the last code, 0. You know, that gets really monotonous. The same goes for spray painting graffiti. In the plot, it has you framing, I guess, a rival gang. And so you spray these spider insignias in three spots in each area. But you have to do it three times, and I don't know. If I were a marijuana grower, I'd probably expect, you know, a setup with that much paint there. And the worst thing about it is that spray painting, it's not even a mini game. You go to the spot that's marked on your map, and then you press a button, and you watch the same slow animation routine kind of play out there. I mean,
isn't it kind of like San Andreas?
What part of San Andreas?
Didn't San Andreas have like a spray painting?
Yeah, but that one you move the stick around. You move the left stick.
Did you?
Am I mixing that up with the Mark Echo game? I don't know. One game I know I spray painted, and it had kind of a quality rating there. And you move kind of the right stick, and you didn't want to get, you know, you didn't want the spot to smear. And it was a little bit more complicated. This one, you just watch it play out. A couple other things, the interface, it uses this old font. It looks like an old, maybe a VGA computer font. The engine seems to render fog better than any other environmental object. And then the thing that kind of bugged me, and I tweeted about it, is one of the players wears this peripheral vision blocking hoodie in the game. which is just completely stupid there. She's supposedly some gangsters working for the FBI. What I'm really puzzled at is the team responsible for the highly anticipated and pretty well previewed Dead Island could come out with this crap. And I don't know, I think it's a little bit of a worrisome sign.
You know, I mean, I of course would not pass judgment till it comes out, but when we watched people playing Dead Island,
right.
I was not impressed at all. So actually, I'm not surprised to hear you say that. And if Dead Island ends up being great, you know, I'll take it back and I'll apologize. But I was really not impressed watching, and I watched different people play to try and make sure I wasn't just watching someone who was sucky.
Mm-hmm.
But it did seem like the motions weren't, you know, quite, I mean, the zombie motions, like, weren't quite there, and the game seemed a little jarry. And
I noticed that, too. I was just like, this feels like a game that I've seen before, played before. There was something about it where it just, I don't know, I didn't get my hands on it, but it didn't seem unique watching
yeah.
it.
Right.
Play out. It didn't seem like there was anything special about it.
And honestly, maybe what they should do is become, if the next couple games they do sort of are all this bland, then maybe what they should end up doing is doing movie trailers as a company instead, because their trailer for Dead Island is incredible.
See, everybody loves that trailer, and I thought it was good, but number one, it was a trailer, and number two, it was just the, you know, time reversal mechanic.
Where they used it was ingenuitive, and the way that they set it up was well done. So, I mean, just because it's not the most unique tactic,
mm-hmm.
I don't think makes it less effective as a trailer. And part of making good trailers is creating something that makes people go, oh, yeah, that's going to be great, which is what people ended up saying about Dead Island until everyone realized at E3 that it wasn't, you know, really as great as it looked.
Okay. It just made me think of Irreversible. That Coldplay video, which one was that? The scientist. And every other backward motion type of...
Right. On a
Coldplay?
Side note...
Ew.
Wait a minute. What's going on, Blue?
Coldplay? Ew.
I like Coldplay.
They have some stuff that's okay and some stuff that's...
You know why I really like Coldplay? In SingStar, I can hit the notes. I'm dead on. If I don't platinum every fucking Coldplay song, there's something wrong.
That's so sad. Why do you like that band? Because I can sing like them in Rock Band.
SingStar, baby. SingStar.
On a side note, if it's of any interest to anyone, I just found $21 in my jacket. Yeah.
Oh, you know what?
Hey, split it three-way. $7 for each.
No. My jacket.
Are we talking about... No, I won't go there.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, back to last episode. Much too... mature for that. Anyway, next in brief, I got to spend about 90 minutes with Disgaea 4, Promise Unforgotten, which, guess what, is more Disgaea. I think fans are sure to eat it up. I was. And the haters, well, they're going to keep on hating. So first, I guess I want to talk a little bit about the characters. Every time I go into a new Disgaea game, I expect... not to like the cast as much as Laharl, Etna, Flan. Mm-hmm. But after a bit, within the brief period, Velva Torres is the main protagonist. He's this reluctant vampire. He's kind of grown on me. He kind of recalls Luis, or I guess Louis would be the proper New Orleans pronunciation, from Interview with a Vampire. He doesn't want to drink, you know, human blood, and so he's eating sardines. And he has this... this werewolf kind of sidekick, butler assistant who's, you know, ultra polite, and they do play off each other well. And so at first I just thought, I'm not going to like this. I know that the, you know, characters come into the game, you know, make a reprise during the last part of the game. And I was just thinking they're not going to grow on me, but little by little they have. I made it out of the extended tutorial, which is classic, you know, Disgaea SRPG action. Now you have the ability to lift characters, you know, hands to head to make these towers. So you have these whole columns across the playfield there. So far, the game doesn't deviate wildly from formula. You get the same kind of chapter-driven story format and, you know, that between battle town for gearing up your characters. The new HD artwork looks great. I know some people say the animation still isn't up to contemporary standards, but one thing that I really like, and shout out to Sean Nola, are the paper dolls. The animated characters that are used to convey the dialogue, they look really well drawn and they emote kind of proficiently. So they're not just, you know, three simple faces. I haven't dug into the content, the, you know, make your own penis levels and stuff like that. that one was a freebie because we talked about that on the interview with Ryan. But anyway, I expect...
What the
next week. You listen to the interview, right?
Yeah, I just...
over in Japan, you had free reign to kind of make your own levels and things like that, and they were afraid of people spelling out, you know, the F word or making, you know, penis levels and stuff like that. So they took a little bit of that ability away from us Americans.
I think that what's cool, really dude. Funny... What's really funny is that a country that produces rape games is afraid that America will write explicit words in levels. Like, somehow that's worse.
It's
that's a good
not,
point, dude!
I don't think it's NIS. I really think they would think it's funny. I think it's Sony. And the whole thing was, if someone if someone were to oversee, they'd have to oversee and appoint someone to look at every level and kind of monitor that. And they just don't have the money to hire someone to look. You know, penis, no. Penis, no. Penis, oh yeah.
Or God forbid there should be an explicit word or a body part name in a level. Like, that would be the worst thing ever. Oh God.
Probably afraid of, like, one good swastika level and Sony's going to be on the wrong side of a...
Well, that's... Because
that would hit Kotaku.
Offensive.
It's like, you know, here's printies and swastikas. Nazi printies.
I feel like trying to protect against that stuff in gaming is kind of, I mean, like we were talking about earlier, immaturity just exists where it exists. There's not a lot you can do about it, really. And like World of Warcraft, there are people humping each other's faces all the time. And nobody protects against that, so I mean...
There is? I need to start playing WoW. I didn't know that.
That really puts the WoW in WoW.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, now, if somebody just, you know, randomly...
I mean, sometimes because...
Can you walk away? Can you, you know, go PvP on them?
You can walk... I once had someone chase me, and they kept trying to face hunt me, which was not mature, to say the least. But no, you go into a town, and everyone's sort of a... Well, not everyone, but there's a lot of immature nerds, which is fine. But they end up doing, like, one person will do sexy dance, and then someone else will walk up to them and do sexy dance, and then that person will crouch, and the other person will do hump-hump sexy dance into their face, and it just becomes this big, like, really? There's no point to this. It's, like, worse than cyber sex. Literally nothing is happening at all.
Something is somewhere, but...
Oh, well, maybe, okay.
I wanted this shit, I'd be playing Second Life, where it rains penises.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, dildos rain down from the moon. Last thing I wanted to talk about was I jumped ship this week from the iPhone platform, and I picked up an Android.
Tell us about
Welcome to the club!
I got the HTC Inspire, which I'm really happy with. Originally, I purchased my iPhone to kind of review apps, but it was an old 3G, and as it grew older, it just wasn't feasible for playing games, and even for using things like GPS or Twitter. Everything just kind of slowed down to a crawl. So far, the phone is really zippy, and I really like not having many of the arbitrary limitations imposed by Apple. Like things like if I want to download a podcast or an app that's more than 20 megabytes before, I'd have to hook it up with iTunes, find this Wi-Fi connection. You know, now I can just download. Same with software updates. So far, the Android platform itself, to me, it feels like an iPhone with a lot of the limitations cut loose. There are a couple drawbacks. Mm-hmm. One, I will get the occasional error with my email client, especially when, for some reason, I get mail from the PlayStation blog. The other thing is that the screen can be a little unreadable in the summer sun, unlike the iPhone screen. And the third thing, I mentioned too, but let me give you a third one, is free tethering was disabled, which would have been real nice for, you know, PSP gaming on the go. But other than that...
Well, two things. One, if you set your brightness setting to automatic, it will automatically adjust to make itself brighter and readable when you go outside.
I did that.
Really?
And
I mean, maybe it just depends on the unit, because I have the Droid Pro, and it works fine. Like, I can read it fine out in the sun, as long as I don't have the battery saver, you know, keep the screen dull mode. If I keep it on automatic, then it is fine.
Okay.
Also, you can do tethering. You just go to Easy Tether Lite, which is free, which you have to look up by name because Verizon got mad at them and wanted them to take it off, so they, like, sort of hid it. So you have to search for Easy Tether Lite. The free version does some game tethering. It definitely tethers for laptops, and then if you want to do full game tethering, I think you have to pay the $10 full tether fee, but it's still cheaper than Verizon's tethering.
Now, I thought AT&T, they stopped a lot of the last couple months, they stopped the tethering. Really
are you on AT&T or on Verizon?
Yes, I'm on AT&T.
I don't know. I'm on Verizon, so I don't know if AT&T is different, but I know that what Verizon did to try and stop the free tethering... But they can't tell a company that they can't produce something. So And to my knowledge, like, Verizon isn't able to block Easy Tether on your phone. All they could do is tell the app marketplace to, like, not make the application so prominent. So if you go to the Droid marketplace and you search Easy Tether Lite, then it comes up and you download it. And I mean, I'm on Verizon and
Is that the letters Easy?
No, it's EASY.
Oh. Okay, that's not easy. Well, I'm going to look for it and then report back next week then.
Okay.
But so far, I really like the games are pretty good. Mm-hmm. Smaller file sizes are definitely a plus. I noticed for a lot of the applications, they're not as big as the iPhone. So two things I've been playing. First is Baseball Stars 2 by Gameville, which offers it a lot of content for kind of a free-to-play game. So far, I'm in this career mode of a batter and it fast sims all the boring stuff. So every time you kind of go up to bat is when the game queues up. So you manage morale, you train your player, and you gradually kind of assist your team, make it to victory. Beyond that, there's even a nice little exhibition game of baseball. There's, you know, leagues and other stuff. And it works well on the touchscreen because you're just tapping at the right instance to swing. Bases are handled, you know, throwing to a base via a small diamond in the left corner. So it works really well. I don't want to spend too much time, but the other thing I've been playing was Star Legends, Black Star Chronicles, which is this free-to-play MMO. And it's not unlike, and I think its ambition is to be something like Phantasy Star Portable. You use the virtual D-pad to move around, while three or four different characters have different attacks, you know, depending on what their class is. The game has a lot of, you know, free loot. I know there's premium stuff, but I didn't feel the pressure to upgrade or to buy it. You know, I was kind of hanging with a bunch of guys, scooting around outer space, spaceship dungeons, and having a pretty good time at it. And it really worked well, considering there were four people on screen without much lag. So definitely check it out because, you know, like a lot of really good games, free to play. So now, Blue, I understand you've been playing some Droid games.
Tell
me more.
First of all, what games have you thinking of getting?
I haven't really purchased any paid games. I've just been playing these free ones. And then every once in a while, like on Baseball Stars, it'll say download coin drop, and you get like an 800 coin, you know, in-game bonus. So I did that and, you know, started playing that. And just been kind of working my way through Gameville's titles.
I've been playing the Baseball Stars thing. That was one of the first games I downloaded when I got the Droid. And for a free app, the presentation of that thing, we've reviewed MLB Bobblehead Pros about a month ago or so. And the presentation of Baseball Superstars 2, in my opinion, smokes it.
Okay, what's so funny?
Nothing. Continue.
But yeah, I mean, you know, the graphics are nice and colorful. The stages, there is a difference between Bobblehead Pros and Baseball Superstars 2, is that, you know.
Oh, yeah, those goddamn demon pitchers. What's up with them? Like, I'll be on a roll, you know, I have three hits in my, you know, four to bats, and then some demon pitcher comes, and he just, you know, throws a ball, and it's just like smoke and mirrors, and, you know, I just try to swing wild.
It's like Vegas. Run.
Yeah. So
Vegas is like that. As soon as you start winning, they trade pitchers. Dealers.
The one thing that I haven't quite gotten comfortable with, I'm not sure how you feel about it, Diggle, but I don't like the batting.
Mm.
It's like the timing of it. I have so much trouble getting good timing on it, because it's like I think the ball will be one place, it'll be like a smidge ahead, and I'll whiff it.
That's just because of the pitching. I think that they try to articulate the different pitches by throwing them at different speeds. And so you have a fastball that comes at you really fast. And if that's your first pitch, you're going to expect the second pitch to kind of go at that same rate. And they'll throw, you know, like a forkball or a curveball at you. Mm-hmm. And that thing will go a lot slower.
But that's normal baseball, right? I mean, isn't that sort of the point?
Yeah, it is exaggerated somewhat. But
is it?
You know. It's just, I felt like the window of opportunity to connect, it felt like a little off to me. It's like I'd be, you know, I mean, I've been playing baseball games, you know, all my life. I mean, it's not like some sort of a, you know, new player problem getting the timing down. It's just I felt that, like, I think that when, like, a ball gets to a certain point, you know, towards the player, I think, okay, time to swing. But I guess the way the game handles, like, where the ball is and how the player can connect with it, Mm-hmm. It's like different from most baseball games, and I have trouble connecting with most hits.
Hmm. Well, I know I'm batting more than 500, but I also put a lot of juice in the hitting training aspect. Mm-hmm. You know, where the guy, not the one where he hits the tire repeatedly, but where he's hitting the ball over and over again. There's little cutscenes. Bless you.
Sorry.
Yeah, don't let it happen again.
I'm so sorry.
Just kidding. So what else have you been playing on the Droid Blue?
I've been playing this big surprise SNES-era-like RPG game called Xenonia.
Oh, I played a little bit of that.
And
I actually played the free-to-play third one.
Yeah. I saw the third one when I first loaded up the store, and I got that free and played a bit of it. Mm-hmm. And I guess the other two games were on sale for like 99 cents or something like that. Right. I'm thinking, well, $2 for the entire trilogy, I guess there might be some lore that I missed, so I might as well just drop the two whole dollars on it and get the entire series.
Right, get the trilogy.
And I played a bit of it, you know, like I said, not, you know, like with Lunar, not too much with it, but I mean, for a dollar, if you're a fan of SNES era RPGs, mm-hmm. I'd say it's a must-buy, because it's kind of like a combination of a dungeon crawler and like a, I guess, like a traditional RPG, I guess that's a fair way to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I don't like, and this is probably just for my phone, mm-hmm. but I'm not that crazy about touch screen controls. I prefer to have you know, buttons with it.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah. I mean, even with that little issue aside, I think mm-hmm. for a dollar, it's easily worth picking up if you have a Droid. And I was checking out the 3DS shop, and Xenonia is also on there as well.
I heard not to buy it. Or maybe, I'm sorry, that's the PSP version.
Really?
One last game I wanted to recommend, PVM, Pumpkins versus Monsters or Mummies, one of those. just called PVM. And you'd think immediately, what does it sound like? Plants versus Zombies. And it would be a complete ripoff. But no, instead you have the bottom of the screen and you have multicolored pumpkins. And what you have to do is kind of slide them together in this little corral. And once you have three or more pumpkins together, then you fling them forward and you kind of launch them at the mummies, and that takes them out. So there's more the action game. It's not a tower defense. And it's a free-to-play game, ad-supported, but really kind of cool. I was playing that much longer than I should have.
The other nice thing about Droid games is that Android often comes out with special Android and Amazon mm-hmm. with special one-day freebie deals.
Right.
So, like, I got Plants vs. Zombies for free. Because one morning I got an email that was like, today, Plants vs. Zombies is free. So I went and downloaded it.
You must have been so happy that day, huh?
That's a cool game
to get for free.
Totally. No, I had never played it because I'd been like, oh, it's trendy and I don't know if I want to spend money on it. But I had been looking to try it. I just didn't want to buy it. Mm-hmm. But having played it, I would have paid for it. I mean, it's a great game. Like, I love it. Mm-hmm. I got so addicted to it right away. But anyway, so the Droid has a lot of offers that come up. Like, I think if you join the Android Amazon, you know, joint marketplace thing, that you can get daily offers on, like, this app is $1 today, this game is free today, blah blah blah.
Yeah, I've seen that. I think I've missed some good stuff. Tell me, beyond Plants vs. Zombies for free, what have you been playing?
Well, actually, I sadly have not had a lot of time to play games this week, so instead I thought I would talk about some things that I'm excited about playing, because I finally broke down and ordered a DS Lite off of eBay for, I think, $60 I got it for.
Was it new used?
It was used, but barely. Like, they showed pictures and everything. There's no scratches on it. They've had screen protectors on the screens the whole time. Hmm. And it came with Scribblenauts, which is one of the games I've wanted to play for so long. So I was, like, sold.
Was it the sequel or the original Scribblenauts?
The original, but I want to play the original first anyway. But anyway, I thought I'd represent some indie games and then talk about some DS games that are coming up. So from Puppy Games, there's this thing called Droid Assault. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yes. Puppy Games.
They've advertised with this before.
So. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So for listeners, right now you can get an Ultra Bundle, which comes with like three games, which is Ultratron and Titan Attacks and Droid Assault. And this is something you can get right now. This is not up and coming, but it looks phenomenal, and it's something that I am planning on getting this coming week. So I'll give you more info on it next time, but it looks, I mean, it looks actually really well done, and like it would be a really addictive, nice robot action game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if
how much is it?
It's $10 for the ultimate three games, so you get three games for $10.
Not bad at all.
Which is a really good deal. And speaking of another $10 game that you can play the demo of first, there's one called Chase Ace.
Okay.
Off-world leagues, which looks like it's an online multiplayer, like top-down shooter, space shooter. And it's a scrolling 2D, like it's a throwback to the, you know, retro 2D scrolling kind of environment things. But you get a full level editor with it. You get single and multiplayer modes with it, and it looks pretty entertaining. And I like games in that genre, all the way from, you know, easier ones to the more difficult things like Gradius and Metal Slug. And so it looks really cool. And also, what
it's in that genre.
Yeah.
Oh wow! I gotta check that out then. Okay.
And also, what I liked about it is that
I'm bringing up screenshots. It looks really cool.
It looks great. It looks really good. And you can join their alpha test, which is not something you see all the time.
I really like the explosions. They look really cool.
If you like indie games, I would recommend checking it out. Deagle and I will probably end up checking it out and talking about it next time.
Yeah, Chase Ace looks good.
It does look good. So there you go. You heard it first here. And... So mostly that, and then I'm going to check out a couple DS games. I'm super excited about Sola to Robo, Red the Hunter,
which is a game
that we got to look at and see a little bit of at E3, which I thought, man, I'm not going to be able to play it. I'm going to have to listen to Sean and Deagle tell me if it was any good, but now I can just play it myself.
Is that your first DS, or did you have one in...
No, that's my first DS. I mean, I had Game Boys and Game Boy Advance and Game Boy Color, but never a DS. They came out at a time in my life when I had a lot of consoles and PC... console games and PC games that I was buying, and I just didn't have the money to spend on a portable, and I didn't really need one. But now I'm going to be commuting to law school every day, and it's like an hour and a half train ride. Mm-hmm. So I will need, on those days when I have the rare days when I don't have any studying to do on the train, I will need a portable to play games on.
Well, you picked a good choice.
Right? And but I'm a little nervous about it, actually, because I looked at upcoming, You know, I looked at upcoming DS games. There's if you Google upcoming DS and 3DS games, you can get a whole list.
Right. And it looks like a big pile of crap, right?
No, it looks like nothing. Like, for example, in October, okay, so September looks okay. Sola to Robo's coming out. Camping Mama for people like Sean Nola, who just love the mama. She's going camping.
He's a MILF hunter?
I think so. Remember how much he wanted to take a picture with her at E3?
No, if I recall, we kind of forced him to. But
no, he was all over that.
Did he grab Mama's behind?
He was behind her.
He made her eyes light up.
Maybe we should
actually a small man in the time.
Maybe we should post that picture. I also have the picture of him getting cut up by one of the Mega Marines. Maybe we should post some of those from our E3 excursions. Yeah. But anyway, Kirby Math Attack is coming out, so September doesn't look bad.
Wait. Kirby Math Attack?
Mass Attack.
Oh, Mass Attack. Okay.
Mass Attack.
That's the one where there's like about a dozen or so different Kirbys?
I don't know for sure, actually. I don't remember which one.
I thought
one
you
is.
Said Math Attack, and
no.
I got scared of Kirby.
Kirby does Kong math? Well,
excuse me,
Mario has done math, so I could see Kirby doing some math.
I think
math.
Donkey Kong did math, too.
So really, he's...
Mario also teaches typing.
I liked Mario teaches typing. It was actually
me
pretty
too.
Good.
Was he better than Mavis Beacon?
Yes. Anyway, but if you look down this spoiler list, like I said, Google this and you can bring the list up for yourself. There's like one thing coming out in October. There's like three things coming out in November, two of which are Lego Harry Potter. One coming out in the US and one coming out in Europe. And then they have like three things coming out in December. So I was thinking to myself, this must be because they're trying to make the move to the 3DS. They're going to have new games coming out on that instead. Nope. There's almost nothing coming out on the 3DS at all. And then, you know, you get a couple
titles.
Because
we get 20 free games. That's going to carry us through until at least 2-3 weeks.
I guess, but even into the 2011-2012 year, the only thing they have coming up are four games for Japan. Nothing for the US.
Really? What side are you looking at? Because there's... gotta be some stuff.
Go to, well, if you want to look at this site, go to forum.romulation, romulation.net.
Okay.
/ index.
/ upcoming.
No, / okay. index.php ?
You're kidding me.
No.
You are kidding me.
Do what I'm telling you to do.
Okay.
ZX383B473. This is standard search words, guys.
No, question mark, topic.
$.
You guys are ridiculous. This is standard writing for topic questions. ? Equals 27703.
You're kidding me.
.0. Okay. Or
I just went to GameStop.com. Do what I did.
No, don't go to GameStop. Or if that's too hard, Google upcoming 3DS games.
That and what you will a smidgen easier.
Okay, which is what I told you to do in the first place, so you should have listened, not my fault. Anyway, if you Google upcoming DS games, it's the 4, 5, 6. It's the 7th hit on the Google search results that you get. It might not be a complete list, but what I'm saying is this is a list that someone put together that looks official enough that has like nothing on it. I mean, it says it's updated.
Wait, you're looking at a forum.
Yes, I am.
Okay, last post was in November
18th,
2009. No. According to Google.
Oh, that's not the one I'm on.
Oh, okay. That's the forum.romulation.net/index.php? No. Fuck no. I just looked up upcoming DS games.
I don't think that's the one I'm on. Hold on, let me check.
Okay. I mean, it's like, with the DS, I mean, yeah, there's a couple of things that I'm, you know, seeing that look kind of interesting. There's Devil Survivor 2 coming out next year, Harvest Moon, Tale of Two Towns, and stuff like that. But I think the piece is that it has this incredible library of games.
But the crummy thing is that if you are only able to get old games, I'll come back to the email address later. The only problem is that if you're only able to get old games, then it makes it harder to discuss them with any kind of relevance unless you're finding titles that like no one's heard of and no one's played.
Now, I've just been doing my own search, and for example, the 3DS, we got the Metal Gear Snake Eater 3D, Star Fox 64 3D, Mario Kart, Resident Evil Revelations, Kid Icarus Uprising, Super Mario 3D Land.
On the DS or on the 3DS?
3DS. Luigi's Mansion 2.
So, but what's coming out for the DS?
I got a list up. Let's see. I mentioned Devil Survivor, Disney Princess Enchanted Storybooks.
Woo! Yeah.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3.
I got some Ace Attorney Investigations, Miles Edgeworth 2. Harvest Moon, Ooh. The Tale of Two Towns. Yeah.
Wait, it Miles Edgeworth 2 is coming over here? I thought Capcom shit canned that.
Oh, well.
IGN, oh my god, there's no list it. That's good.
Dragon Quest Monsters Joker 2.
Okay, audience, as it turns out, all the lists out there are shit, so just don't listen to any of the last 2 minutes.
Wait, that Aliens game they were talking about, Way Forward, is working on. That's coming out. That looks good.
I want to play some attorney nonsense since I'll actually be becoming an attorney. I think that will be coincidental.
Definitely. If I were to give you some advice, start with the first Phoenix Wright, skip Apollo Justice, and then play Miles Edgeworth.
Yeah.
Apollo Justice never, until like the very end, it really didn't grab me. I was still pissed off that they got rid of Phoenix Wright. Mm. You know, it just had him as like a secondary character, as opposed to, it's Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney 4, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The Ace Attorney games have been some of my favorite DS games. The story in them is absolutely perfect. Well, at least it's a Matlock fan like me. It's it's perfect, you know.
Right. Well, no, I'm happy
I'm
to
looking
hear
forward to Horrible Histories, Ruthless Romans.
Yeah.
For the DS, which is due in December.
That sounds like a television show.
Yeah, it does.
Oh boy. Here's a
oh
game
my god, Gordon Ramsay should make it. Gordon Ramsay should make a DS cooking game. Oh my god.
He probably has.
No, but I want him to.
Instead of pissing off Mama, you can piss him off and he can drop F bombs.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, maybe.
And then they can have a fighting component. It can be like noodle fight, go, and you're actually fighting Gordon Ramsay like Street
there's
Fighter.
There's
style.
Hell's Kitchen on the DS.
No.
Yeah, I'm looking right at it by Ubisoft.
Wait, you don't own that?
But now I'm on GameStop, and they have it. You know, $29.99.
$29 for Hell's Kitchen.
Maybe I can find a copy for cheaper.
Let's move along.
Pre-owned is $10. New is $30. Pre-owned is $10.
Blue, how come you keep disappearing every time you go to look up information?
What do you mean by disappearing? You mean like when I go like this?
Yes.
Because of the chair I'm sitting in, it's a little lower than the table, so I need to kind of lean forward a bit. I can turn the microphone like this. How's that sound?
A little better, kind of. Maybe you should just tape the microphone to your face.
Problem is just taking it off. It would probably rip half my beard off.
So make, like, glue it to, like, a headband, like a girl's headband. And in this case, it'll be a gamer's man headband because it'll have a mic attached to it. And just put it on your head.
Yeah, I'll get, like, one of those Zack Ryder woo-woo-woo headbands off of the WWE shop.
I wouldn't, but... And by the way, Hell's Kitchen you can buy starting at $8.
And they have the Wii version for $15 pre-owned.
I'm not going to lie, I kind of want to check it out just because I love Gordon Ramsay.
And it's rated T for teen, so there might be some cursing in there.
I mean, I tell you what, I'll check it out at some point in the next month or so, and I'll let you all know if it's worth buying.
Report back to us.
I will. So anyway, that's some stuff that I'm looking forward to. And also, I wanted to issue an apology to Alex, who listened to our last podcast and decided that we were a little too hard on the Kinect. I don't think we were too hard on the Kinect, and I stand by that, but I'm
sorry.
That
sounds like a sincere apology.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
You're wrong.
Shut the fuck up. What I'm saying is, I'm sorry that we came across as sounding so negative and judgmental and biased against the Kinect. Maybe it wasn't clear enough that Deagle and I have actually spent a lot of time trying to play around with the Kinect. We end up commenting on so many areas. Like, we comment on Twitter, and we comment on the podcast, and we comment on our site. And if you're not following all those things, you might miss some of the sort of background info that's going on, which is why you should follow us on Twitter. But because of that, maybe it wasn't made clear enough on the cast that we actually have spent a lot of time playing a good variety of games. I mean, Deagle, how many games have you tried on the Kinect?
Maybe 12. No, 15 or so.
Okay, so over a dozen games, and with not a whole lot of success with a lot of them. So I mean,
there are a few. Child of Eden is good. Kinect offers a really interesting experience. It is better with the controller. The Ubisoft Fitness Evolved is definitely pretty solid. Other than that, it's kind of shit.
So anyway, I wanted to issue an apology because I didn't want Alex there to think that we were totally biased curmudgeons who were just blindly hating on something. We have given it a try, and it has not impressed yet. And Microsoft is a big enough company that they can afford to be more impressive. They're not broke.
With my recent Fruit Ninja Kinect, which is a pretty good game, maybe he was kind of reading into my review. I think that came out about the same time. And because I kind of touched on Microsoft made some really lofty promises when they unveiled the Kinect, and they just haven't delivered. Right. And I was kind of talking about that in that Fruit Ninja Kinect keeps it simple, and that's a good thing, because that simplicity works. It's like, no, you're not talking to a 10-year-old boy, or you're scanning in skateboards, or doing all these amazing things, but keeping it simple makes the game work, which is very important for Kinect. And for me, I like games that work.
Right.
Not that.
That's definitely something you want to play, something that works.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's that. I just wanted to issue a brief apology for seeming like we were real biased, but if you go back and look at all our different reportings on it, it didn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some PS3 Move games that aren't up to snuff.
Mm-hmm.
Think about, you know, I haven't played too many lately, but should be getting No More Heroes.
That looks like no. Pretty good.
It sounds like they censor Chef Ramsay poop.
Oh.
Lame.
You think he'd say fuck my own game?
I guess not. But it is on but everyone says if you like Hell's Kitchen you'll like the game, and it's only $4 on Amazon.
Leave in the F words and beep them out. Totally. And stay true to the source material of the show.
That would be good.
You know?
Totally.
That would be a good compromise.
Right.
Anyway, I'm gonna buy it because it's $4, so I'll let you guys know how it goes.
Yeah, you heard it here. Chef Ramsay.
Worth $4.
You're in for some disappointment.
Hey man, I wouldn't mind having Gordon Ramsay in my hands.
We've been trying to keep it clean.
You
were
the one
wanting to
keep things sophisticated.
That's at least slightly subtle. I didn't use the word penis or poop or balls or twat or anything.
Gordon Ramsay is a twat?
No!
There's our title. Gordon Ramsay's twat.
Please don't make it that. I love him, and I don't want him to be mad at us.
Yeah. He's a big listener of the show. Okay, moving on. We have an interview this week with Tom Potter, who's talking about Crimson Alliance, an upcoming XBLA game. Hey guys, Desert Eagle here. This week I'm being joined by Tom Potter from Certain Affinity to discuss the upcoming XBLA title, Crimson Alliance. Welcome to the Tech Gaming Podcast, Tom.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining. Now, the team has had a hand in a number of big titles from Halo Reach, Call of Duty Black Ops, and Left 4 Dead, and even the upcoming Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary. Mouthful there. Now, what prompted the studio to design their own IP, which I'm not mistaken is your second original property after Age of Booty?
Yeah, that's right. So we've been in this space before, Age of Booty, Xbox Live Arcade game. I think that was two and a half years ago.
Okay.
And after we did that, you know, we really enjoyed that space. You know, I think the Xbox Live Arcade is really cool because it's, you know, smaller scale. You can try lots of cool, unique things. You know, it's generally kind of low risk, and you can have fun. So we've always really enjoyed that space and always kind of looked for an opportunity to go back to it. And then, you know, we have a lot of RPG fans here at the studio. You know, a lot of people have actually worked on RPGs in the past or action games in the past. So there's always kind of that that itch on the team that needed to be scratched.
Now, one thing that's interesting is I noticed you said in Crimson Alliance, part of the marketing is it's being billed as Microsoft, as kind of a role-playing game, but it definitely has this hack-and-slash feel to it. How does the team kind of describe the game?
Internally, we've always kind of called it the pick-up-and-play RPG.
Sure.
So it has... It's action RPG. It's skewed more towards action.
Okay.
But it has all of the RPG elements that you would expect. Mm-hmm. But they've all been streamlined to kind of support the action packed nature of the game. So yeah, when we were going through development, we'd be talking about it. We always kind of kept that in mind that, you know, it's action RPG, but you know, given the nature of the XBLA space, and you know, given that we want to make this a very action packed game, there are certain things that we want to do. You know, we want to keep that RPG experience there, but we want to make it, you know, fast and accessible.
Okay. How much dice rolling is going on under the hood?
Zero.
Zero. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Now, can you give me a breakdown of the game's classes?
Sure. There's three classes. Mm-hmm. There's the mercenary, the wizard, and the assassin. The mercenary, I think, is a little deceiving. I think when people first look at that character, you know, there's certain expectations there because he's this giant, bulky fighter guy.
Mm-hmm.
And from other games, people might expect, hey, this is the tank class. Where it's really not the case. He's very nimble. He's agile. He's very fast. So he's a very offensive-oriented character. He does a lot of damage and he does it quickly. So he's primarily melee oriented. The wizard, he's kind of the ranged class of the game, so he's got a bunch of ranged abilities. And then the assassin, which we haven't really shown too much of the assassin yet in any of the previews that we've done, but she kind of lies somewhat in the middle of the two. Mm-hmm. So she does have some melee abilities, and she does have some ranged abilities, so it's kind of a nice blend between the two classes.
Okay. How do they complement one another?
So each character has a suite of their own unique abilities.
Mm-hmm.
They generally fall into certain categories. Like generally, there's a every character has some sort of a stun or a knockback or a knockdown, and then then things get a little bit less of a one to one. But generally, if we take the mercenary for an example, some of his abilities, they serve the character well in single player. He'll have a knockback shield bash attack. So if you're really getting crowded, there's a lot of guys around you, you can just knock people back, and then that stuns them, and then you can kind of, gather yourself and, devise a new strategy, because whatever you were using before clearly wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
But in multiplayer, suddenly you have these stunned characters that are kind of in a different state that other characters can take advantage of, other character classes can take advantage of. So, for example, if the fighter uses his shield bash and knocks a guy back, knocks him down on the ground, that sets the assassin up for one of her special moves, which does ridiculous amount of damage.
Mm.
So there are these different, almost class combinations that you can do during the game to kind of set each other up. So if I'm playing with friends, we're constantly setting each other up.
Mm-hmm.
Another example would be the wizard. He has a freeze attack, so that when he uses that, he can freeze a number of characters right in place. They're encased in a block of ice. So if you're playing with a mercenary, he can go up and he can shield bash that block of ice. And if the block of ice will literally move across the screen, and if it collides with anything, it will shatter and that enemy will die instantly.
Hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot of these different relationships between classes that when you're playing solo, they work great and they're part of your overall strategy. But when you're playing co-op, things change. You're always kind of looking for that assist.
Yeah, like an alley oop there. Now, I'm a fan of everything from the old Dungeons and Dragons, Tower of Doom coin op. Most of the Gauntlet series. I think everything except maybe Dark Legacy. And a big Champions of Norrath, Return to Arms enthusiast. And these games seem to evoke a similar vibe. Can you tell me what titles served as an inspiration for Crimson?
I think I think when people look at the game just purely from screenshots, mm-hmm. they're going to have a certain expectation there. They're going to see third person isometric.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of games that they're going to be like, oh, it plays just like that. But you're right. It's definitely, once you play it and get hands on with it, it's more of a throwback to like Gauntlet Legends.
Mm-hmm.
Even, we can go back to the Golden Axe,
mm-hmm.
that classic kind of action brawler game that's just, really visceral.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about just getting in there, just having a bunch of cool moves and just killing as many guys as you can. So it's the inspiration for us, was definitely rooted in the action genre.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people on the team that have very diverse gaming background, so yeah, we were pulling from, people bring up things from Gauntlet or Golden Axe or things that people would recognize like Torchlight or Diablo.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of this nice amalgamation of lots of different ideas.
Okay. Now, one thing I'm really curious about is the difficulty scaling. With the game handling, as you mentioned, 1 to 4 players, how does Crimson Alliance make sure that the single-player game isn't overly taxing while questing with like a quartet of players isn't this hack and slash kind of cakewalk. I'm not sure if you've ever played Castlevania Harmony of Despair, but the lack of balancing really kind of ruined the game. How did you guys tackle that?
Yeah, that's you're right. It's a really difficult design challenge. Mm-hmm. What we're really interested in is how the game feels, mm-hmm. and that's a very difficult thing to make tangible. Like, what does that mean? On one hand, you can go the route. Well, we'll just scale up damage numbers. We'll scale up hit points when we have more people playing at the same time. The side effect there, though, is if you're playing by yourself, a guy will take 3 hits and then he's dead. But when you're playing with 2 friends, suddenly he takes 8 hits before mm-hmm. he's dead. And there's something really weird about that. It just doesn't feel right. So mm-hmm. we didn't really want to go down that avenue. There's another option where you can do dynamic scaling.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start with 4 people, the game scales up, the difficulty. But there's a lot of really weird edge cases that you can get into there. You and I are playing together, and the difficulty ramps way up, and then you have to leave, so you leave the game. Mm-hmm. But suddenly, the game is still really difficult for me. That didn't really seem like an option either. Mm-hmm. So the more we thought about it, the more it made sense just to leave it up to players to kind of regulate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I haven't really talked about is just the concept of score in our game.
Yeah.
We're a very score-oriented game. Everything that you do during gameplay adds to your cumulative score. And I think because we have that, there's this nice kind of balancing effect that you get with mm-hmm. difficulty. So say you and I and 2 of our friends are playing online, and we decide we're going to play the game on easy, and we have maxed out characters. Yeah, we're just gonna devastate that level.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of it, because we have it on the easy setting, we're not getting the combat multipliers that we would on higher difficulty levels. We're not getting the time bonuses that we normally would. So your score is going to be ridiculously low. Mm. So the way to get great scores in the game mm-hmm. is by increasing the difficulty of the game.
I see.
So, and the more people you have, the easier higher difficulties become.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this nice kind of regulating effect where if we want to, you and I want to play on a mortal difficulty, we're going to have a really difficult time getting through it, but we're going to get a ridiculously high score.
Hmm. Now, one thing is, from what I observed at E3, there were a couple of I saw the kill sprees and kind of the score tracking. I guess there's leaderboard tracking that was mentioned. Now, is the game designed more around these type of score runs, or more of a kind of traditional narrative-based playthrough? Does it kind of walk the line?
It kind of walks the line, I'd say. We're definitely very score-oriented. Like I said, pretty much everything that you do in the game gives you a score. So, mm-hmm. If you find a secret area, we'll tell you, we'll put something up on the screen, and we'll mm-hmm. say, secret area found. We'll give you 500 points.
Okay.
If you kill multiple guys at the same time, there's an additional score bonus there. So it's to your advantage to kill groups of enemies at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the combat multiplier. So every time you kill a guy or kill groups of guys, your combat multiplier continues to tick up. So, mm-hmm. You'll get 2x and 3x and 4x, all the way up to 8x. That's the maximum. But every time you take damage, that multiplier will tick back down. So that's kind of the core of the combat multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this very strong score aspect to the game, which I think a lot of people will return to for replayability. Each of the levels, they'll try to find that perfect line through each level, trying to get that perfect score.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, we do have all of the narrative elements too. We try to tell as much of the story as we can through the kind of the bits between the levels. So 2D cutscenes that, join 2 levels together, mm-hmm. or there's environmental storytelling through how we detail a scene. There might be a story there, or we do quick in-game cutscenes to tell a story. we are telling a narrative there. There is a reason for being in each of these levels beyond just a score. But again, you know, going back to we're a very action-oriented game, anything that happens in the levels themselves, we keep streamlined. You know, we don't want people talking to 20 NPCs before they figure out, you know, which quest to take and which level to go to. It's very streamlined.
Okay. Now, during our E3 walkthrough, we also we talked to the team, and they had mentioned something about how the enemies don't just spawn, but they were deliberately placed on each level. Can you tell me a little bit more about that design decision?
Yeah, so we don't have any random spawns in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is handcrafted by a designer. So when a designer creates an encounter, they have a very specific idea in mind, like how they want it to play out. And that really comes from the desire as a team to create a more tactical experience than I think people are maybe used to in this space.
Mm-hmm.
So we try, in big spaces, for example, we try to give people an overview of the landscape. So you'll get to the start of an encounter and you'll be able to tell, hey, there's two raised platforms over there with archers, and then there's a shaman casting shields over on a third platform to my right. So we're giving people tactical decisions here. Do they want to take out the shaman with the bubble shield, or do they want to take out the ranged archers? That's a very to do that effectively, you really need carefully crafted encounters.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire game is handcrafted. Each of the enemies that appears in the game is placed in a very specific way.
Okay. Very cool. Now one last question. Let's talk about how the game handles loot. Recall a rep mentioned how the buttons would change functions, the buttons on the controller, eliminating the need to kind of jump into a menu system and potentially, you know, slowing the momentum down in a four-player game. So can you tell me how this works?
Sure. Yeah, it's... Our character progression is not entirely, but almost entirely based on getting equipment. The two things that aren't equipment-based are getting heart containers, which increase your health, and getting soul anchors, which give you ultimate power unlock, mm-hmm. which is basically like your mega attack that you use in, you know, desperate situations. But everything else... All of your face buttons, so your A, X, Y, and B buttons, are all tied to equipment. So when you get a new piece of equipment, it's rated based on how it affects each of those face buttons. So for example, I might get a sword that increases my X attack by 10 points. But on the flip side, it may decrease my Y attack by 5 points.
Hmm.
So there's this, you know, you do have to make some judgment here, like, do I want to increase my or max out my X attack?
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth sacrificing my Y attack? So there is an element of having to inspect equipment,
mm-hmm.
but the pace at which we dole out equipment, at which you find it, is such that, you know, you won't be opening that menu all the time during gameplay, and the user interface itself is super streamlined to give you a very quick overview of, you know, just a very quick synopsis of what this thing is doing for you. So it'll tell you, hey, out of 4 stars, we're ranking this one a 3.5, which means it's a really good piece of equipment. So you know this is going to be better than things that are 2.5 or 1.5 or no stars in value.
Hmm.
And if you want to dig deeper than that, there are numbers just assigned, like just overlaid on each of the buttons, like, you know, there's a 7 over the Y, so that means, hey, I'm getting plus 7 Y damage. And then there's kind of a little visual representation of, you know, how that is affecting your current stats. So it's the way the UI is laid out, it's something that you can, you know, you can access, you can look at, you grok it, like, immediately, and then you can close it and then just continue on. You can also, if you're playing, say you and I are playing together, and you want to check out a piece of equipment, you can, and I can still keep playing. You know, it doesn't pause the action at all.
Okay. Very cool. Now, one final question. Let's talk length here. How much game can players expect from Crimson Alliance?
So if you play, let's see, if you play from start to finish, mm-hmm. just normal difficulty, it'll probably take you about 6 hours.
Okay.
If you get into, you know, some of the other stuff that's in the game, challenge maps, if you're really into replayability, like going back to old levels to get high score, there's many, 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 many more hours than that.
Very cool. So before we depart, September 7th is the date. What is the price?
It's 1,200 Microsoft points.
Okay. So very, very cool. Well, thank you so much, Tom, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Robert. Thanks for having me.
Back now.
That was wonderful.
Wasn't it?
It was
better than Gordon Ramsay.
I went through two bags of popcorn listening to that interview.
Mm. Orville Redenbacher?
Nah, it's just like some Act 1 or Act 2 or whatever that crappy movie popcorn stuff.
Gordon Ramsay would not approve.
This popcorn is shit! It is shit!
It lacks passion! There's no passion in it!
But I sprinkled the kettle corn mixing on it. It's not enough, you donkey! You are stupid!
Gordon Ramsay sounds French this week.
Yeah, that's weird.
As he spent too much time in Paris. We got trivia, though. Not right. French, but it's fun.
But it's there.
Doesn't have any twats in it.
Oh, Jesus.
So, let's do a little trivia here. I got 5 or 6 questions. Let's kick it off. Number one, you're not imagining things if No More Heroes cast recalls certain celebrities. Which of these luminaries didn't inspire a character in the game? A. Johnny Knoxville. B. John Barnett. C. Scarlett Johansson. Or D. Tom Cruise.
Who didn't make the cut?
Yes. Who didn't make the cut?
Josh Barnett was, that was B, right?
Yes.
I'll go with him.
Okay, Josh Barnett.
Who is it, Scarlett Johansson?
Did I say John Barnett?
I think you did.
No, I was thinking Johnny Knoxville. But yes, it is Josh Barnett.
So it's John Knoxville, Josh Barnett,
Scarlett Johansson, and Tom Cruise.
I'm going with B because I think he's like the most forgettable of all four choices.
Okay. Sage, pick the winner.
Chicken dinner?
No.
Tom Cruise.
Correct answer is Tom Cruise.
Yeah!
Ah, crap.
Yeah, Tom Cruise in the game. No cruising. Which of these strange occurrences happened at the Japanese launch of the original Wii game, No More Heroes? A. No one purchased a copy for the first 20 minutes of the signing. B. Suda stormed out of the event after encountering a Famitsu reviewer who gave the game a low review score. C. The event ended early after cosplaying Travis Touchdown lookalike accidentally beam katana'd 3 innocent bystanders. Or D. Suda51 didn't show up, later claiming he had a dentist appointment that day.
It's the 20-minute thing.
It's the 20-minute
thing. A's for me as well.
Really? You guys sure it wasn't a cosplaying Travis Touchdown? Accidentally beam katana people?
Yeah, because I remember seeing photos of him on Kotaku just sitting there rather lonely with a whole stack of No More Heroes toilet paper.
Oh, you guys are right. Good job. No one showed up for the first 20 minutes. That's a shame. I mean, I guarantee, Suda, you come to L.A., I'd be there. Money in hand, right, to buy. What's the new one? Chainsaw Lollipop? A lollipop chainsaw, one of those.
That looks like it's going to be kind of interesting.
It's got a good title. It's catchy. Like it.
Mm-hmm.
So while we know the game is Altered Beast here in the United States, what is the direct translation of the game's Japanese moniker? Is it
for
A?
Ultra Beast?
Altered Beast.
Oh, Altered Beast.
What did you think I said? Ultra Beast?
Yeah, I was like, what is Ultra Beast?
It's like Ultraman. Has a light on his chest and goes,
it's a game I missed.
Ping, ping, ping.
That's Gordon Ramsay. He's an Ultra Beast sometimes.
Yeah, he is.
A, Beast That Will Be Changed. B, Beast King's Chronicle. C, Raging Wolfman of the Moon. Or D, Wolf-Headed Madman from History.
I'm going to go with D.
You're going to go with D, Wolf-Headed Madman from History. Sage, no. Your pick.
Jyoki, Beast King Chronicle.
That was an offensive voice there, but you had the correct answer. Beast
no, it wasn't.
Chronicle. What?
No, it wasn't. It was just accented, that's all.
Yes. Beyond all the punches and groin kicks, Altered Beast packs an intense storyline. Who is the main character? A, a resurrected Roman centurion. B, Lupine, the wolf god. C, a man and a wolf whose souls become intertwined on the journey to the underworld. Or D, Daniel Lobo, a Greek soldier who was bitten by a wolf by fighting off the Persians.
Interestingly, it's a Roman centurion, which I remember thinking is weird because the setting seems like ancient Greece.
Right.
So it seems like it should be a Grecian, but he's a Roman.
Okay. Blue?
The line, rise from your graves.
Waves.
Yes. Waves?
Yes.
Waves.
Waves. Brains. I should probably trust Sage on this, but I think I'm going to go with A.
She did say A. She can't be trusted. Correct answer, A, resurrected Roman centurion. Good job, guys.
I thought that was C.
No. C was a man and a wolf whose souls became intertwined on the journey to the underworld. Not even sure that's legal in ancient.
That's the one he wanted. Blue didn't even know what answer he was giving. You just...
No, I know. I know that the first one was the one I wanted.
It's World 8-0, you got to go back to the start, Blue. There he goes. Okay, one line in El Shaddai, Ascension to the Metatron, became immortalized in the Net Buzzwords Awards 2010 Grand Prix when it was shown at the 2010 Tokyo Game Show. Name it. So, get ready for these lines. A,
I don't even know what the question is.
I'm having a little bit of trouble with that one myself.
Okay, there's a line in El Shaddai. Uh-huh. It became immortalized in this Japanese site called Net Buzzword Awards 20 Grand Prix.
Okay.
The game itself was shown at the 2010 TGS. You guys up to speed now?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. I had to slow it down for you.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. A, didn't you realize your good acts have killed millions? B, the road to hell is long and filled with the wandering faithless. C, you sure that's enough armor? Or D, all the world's angels can't help you now. I should be a voice actor.
Yes, you should. Story.
Your answers. Let's hear them. Wolf-headed Madman from History.
B?
B. Okay.
I'm going to go with C.
Correct answer. You sure that's enough armor? C. You're right.
Good yeah, answer. Baby.
Yeah. So, no, tally up, what was it? Three, y'all?
No, I won.
I think she had three and I had two.
Two. Was it? I won by one. Woo!
Oh, yeah, that's right. Tom Cruise.
Give me a cookie!
Right now.
For the record, just so everyone knows, I don't always end up asking for the answers again to be a jackass. It's because I'm not an audio person. I'm a visual person. So not being able to see... Plus, I can't remember names. So not being able to see of this... And then Deagle lists a bunch of names. It's like literally my worst nightmare. It's my video game nightmare. No!
My video game nightmare.
It's my video game nightmare. That's going to be my show. I'm going to start my video game nightmare.
Yes. And it's going to look a lot like Call of Juarez, the cartel.
Yes. No, Blue. it'll be like Angry Video Game Nerd. I'll be in my room playing, and I'll look at the screen, and I'll go, oh, hi, here's my video game nightmare of the week.
You're going to say it like that? Like, oh, hi.
Yes. Sage's rage meter filled by 35.
Yes, exactly.
Blue, you have a question for us.
Yes, I do.
Whip it out.
Sip.
how impressive. You sure that's enough armor? Sorry.
Okay, so by the time this goes up, my next retrospective.
Oh, no. Here we go again. We are cursed.
The last 20 minutes of our shows are always just going to be a de-evolution into laughing about boner jokes.
You say that like it's a bad thing. I don't get it. Okay, so by the time the podcast goes up, my next retrospective column should have gone up on Super Godzilla. And I've decided I'm going to try to come up with a question based on each classic game I play. Mm-hmm. and toss them at you guys. Right. So you guys can have like a heads up to go to Wiki and check all the stuff out that might potentially be interesting.
Sounds like a lot of work, but okay.
Okay, your question of the week is, let me get into my reading voice. When Super Godzilla was brought to North America in 1993, there was a change made to the game. Aside from the translated text, what was different about the English version? A. A stage based in Hiroshima that featured a fight against Gigan was removed from the localized version due to a potential PR backlash over Americans being able to destroy Hiroshima again. B. Mechagodzilla 2 was substituted with Mechagodzilla 1974 because Mechagodzilla 2 had yet to be seen in North America. C. The Time Attack, Boss Survival, and City Smash modes were added to the US version. Or D. Jet Jaguar was included as a playable character for those who completed the game once. However, he could only be played for as long as the system was left on for.
Mechagodzilla something something. That one.
I'm going to go with Hiroshima.
And the answer is B.
Oh.
Mechagodzilla, basically, 1993 was around the time Mechagodzilla 2, Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2 or something like that came out over in Japan, but the movie hadn't made it over to the States yet. So instead, they substituted the Mechagodzilla 2 sprites and sounds and whatnot with the original Mechagodzilla from 1974 and 1975.
Spoiler warning for when that comes out.
Yeah, it's the second stage.
Cool.
Very cool. So, good job. Good job, Sage. You beat me on that one.
I'm sure next week I'll totally boner it up. But
you'll what?
Just boner it up?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means, but it sounds fun.
Well, if you pay attention to the old Batman comics.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. And old terminology from back in the day, you would know that originally it meant to make a big mistake.
Yeah, still means that sometimes.
Gross.
In public.
I think we're getting into four unlawful carnal knowledge territory with that one.
Right, let's get into mailbag instead. Keep it cool. Civilized. We got a question from Hyrule Warrior. Is gaming the sport of the rich? I work and go to school and can rarely afford to get a game at launch. Once a game's out for 2 weeks, no one on GAF talks about it anymore. So, gaming, sport of the rich?
Has it
overtaken polo?
I mean, I don't think it's the sport of the rich, but I mean, I think what he's getting at more, which I think is true, is that it is hard to stay. I mean, I know this from doing the podcast. It is hard to stay current mm-hmm. with new games when you don't have a lot of money. So, mm-hmm. some advice, ways that I get around that. Mm-hmm. By the way, I love the name Hyrule Warrior. ways that I get around that, I have a lot of friends who play games, and mm-hmm. so. Some of us converse about it beforehand, and some of us it just happens to work out this way, but we usually end up getting different games, so we'll trade games to play. Because that way we don't all have to, you know, we can still get new release games that are coming out without having to pay for all of them. Another way is to start your own review site. and then you'll get sent review copies of games.
Oh yeah, that's an easy one. Let me tell you from experience, that's really easy. Yeah,
it's an option. Yeah. And another one is to just be okay with the fact that maybe you're going to be a little behind on some, you know, like super, because some games that come out are not as much, and then you can be recent on those. And some games that come out that are super expensive, you can always, you know, wait and get them later and just not care that, okay, so the talk about them is not right. going to be relevant when I get them.
I mean, I don't mean to sound mean, but there's two different things here. One, you can game to kind of enjoy the experience the programmers have created, or you can game more for the social aspect, meaning the discussion. And I'm not saying one is better than the other, but if you're in that former, you can play kind of old, critically acclaimed games that have dropped, you know, to like the $20 level. Like one example, I saw Heavy Rain at the local Fry's for $20. Most places have it for $30. And I couldn't recommend the experience for $60, but I don't think I could, or I couldn't recommend it missing it for, you know, one third of the price at $20 either, which is really cool. Sure, you know, the cat may be out of the bag and you might know who the killer is, but I still think it is a worthwhile experience for $20. And so I really think you have to determine, you know, where your interest is in gaming or in the discussion of gaming. And if it's in the discussion, sure, there's demos and you can stay current on certain things.
And there's also there's Redbox.
Yeah, Redbox. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
I'm not sure how quickly they refresh their games. It seems
once a week. They promise. Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
But I mean, that seems like a really good way to get around that problem too, because I mean, they're like $2 a day.
Yep. They have a pretty decent selection right now. They've been having that Smurf game in my red box for a few, like the third week, so it needs to get the hell out and make room for something else. So next question comes from Ratchet. He asks, now that the 3DS is $169 and the Vita is ages away, should I get one? I guess he means the 3DS. What's your honest opinion?
No.
Really? Yeah, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, it's. I think maybe I should say no, with a few exceptions. I mean, if you've never played The Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time, yeah. If you like fighting games, yeah. That's pretty much it.
I think when
the 3DS mm-hmm. will really be worth it will be later this year, you know, when mm-hmm. Mario Kart and Mario Land 3D or Mario mm-hmm. 3D Land comes out. I think yeah. when those games start hitting, it'll definitely be worth it. I mean,
the Mario Kart whatever 7 is going to be a game changer? I mean, all I saw that was different was that there was a little propeller on the back and he could go underwater, so they changed the physics a little bit, but.
Well, Blue didn't have the advantage of being able to see.
Oh, but you can see it online.
I saw the trailers. Mm-hmm. I saw the 3D trailers that they had in the eShop around
E3. That's true.
Oh, that's probably better. You didn't watch it at that crazy angle we saw it from because we were far left side. And it smelled like farts.
And we were surrounded by super fanboys. Super, super fanboys.
And one guy dropped like a $2,000 camera, I think, on stage.
No, not on me, but it was really sad. And it was not my fault.
On your shoulder?
No.
Oh, it's okay. And then he made us, like, during the show, he made us look for it. Like, I just heard it chatter. I'm not, you know,
right.
glass under a seat, buddy. I'm not falling for that one.
But, I mean, it's like, with the 3DS, it's like, there right now, there really isn't that much to play on it that's worth picking it up for. Even at $170. I'd say that there's like two or three games that if you need to have them on the go ahead and get one. I mean, it's the 3DS is a system that over its lifetime will end up probably being worth it, especially with the price drop now. I think that's going to get developers behind the system because I mean the sales took off over in Japan. It's like 200,000 units were moved last week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, Microsoft's going to push it. Yeah,
it's good. And once the momentum starts shifting from the DS to the 3DS, it'll be worth it. It'll be worth whatever you pay for. It'll be worth the $250 that I paid for it at launch. I mean, it's just going to take time, but it will be a system worth having.
I would recommend, if you are thinking about getting a Vita and you don't have a PSP already, get a PSP. You know, they're fairly inexpensive. You can use it as a backup system. A lot of games, really cheap. You know, they keep pushing stuff out on the PSN. You get those free PSP minis. Personally, I've been playing my PSP more because it does a few things. Number one, the 3DS hasn't allowed people to play video. So I've been watching anime on the way to work on the PSP, which is, you know, pretty nice little screen there. So, think about the PSP. A lot of people say it's a dying system, but, you know, there's still stuff trickling out. There's some really good deals to be found for it.
I think they announced a PSP without Wi-Fi over in Europe for $100 or 99 euros or something like that.
That might be worth it. Yeah.
But there is a difference of games. I would say, much like Hyrule, like in connection with what Hyrule Warrior said, if you don't have the money, a 3DS is not worth getting right now. And if you do have the money and you like Nintendo games better than the kind of games that come out on PSP, then you should probably get a 3DS because it is going to be worth it later. It's just not really worth it now. But if you don't care and you just want any portable system, then yeah, you could get, you know, a Sony. But if you like Nintendo games, like if you want to go the Nintendo route and more than anything else, and you want a portable and you can afford it, then I don't think the price is going to drop any more than it has now anytime soon. So you could get it and it would be worth it later.
All right. And if you do care about your money when you're buying games, I would suggest you read more of our opinions and reviews on www.techgaming.com, where you can read our latest reviews, our editorials, and subscribe to our podcast via our RSS feed or iTunes. And if you'd like to follow Sage advice, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at tech, T-E-C-H underscore gaming. Sage is at Samurage, Samurage, and our friend Dynamite Fandango. Who the hell is that? Is it your porn name, Blue?
That's just my name of the week.
Name of the week. Okay, so you can follow.
It's like when people go on Twitter, they're going to see that I'm Kirky Lions Rainbow.
What? That's confusing. Pick one name.
Yeah. You're going to be the podcast host formerly known as Dynamite Fandango. Really throw people off. But you are at, whatever you call yourself, at Blue Swim. BlueSwim. And we should give a shout out to long lost Sean Kirkland, who is at Sean Nola, who said he missed me today on Twitter. So shout out to you, Sean, wherever you are.
Here's another benefit to following people on Twitter. I don't know about the guys, but if you are on Twitter, then you can contact me. And if you're ever in Santa Fe, you're welcome to come to my house and play some video games with me.
Wow, cool.
Sector!
He's booking a flight as we speak.
Must get Price to Santa Fe.
Yes, he's slapping a FedEx sticker on his ass right now just so he can get there overnight.
That's weird, and I'm pretty sure they won't let you ship anything live through FedEx.
If it's in a big
enough
box.
He just has to be really quiet.
Yeah. He just has to... Mm-hmm. For you, he'll do that. He'll lay motionless.
And not have obvious air holes. I hope he packs an air tank, too.
Wait, he's an android.
Is he?
Yeah.
Sector? I love androids.
Oh, it's a match made in... Maybe not heaven, but in the other world.
Cyber weirdness, please.
Depending on what android you're talking about, maybe like Google headquarters?
Maybe. At least they're a nice monopoly, right?
If there's such a thing.
I meant to say, speaking of which, I don't know if you guys know this already, but listeners, some news for you. If you don't, Google bought Motorola today.
Why?
So that they have the hardware in their hands. Because most droids.
Say that again?
Don't be gross. A lot of the Android phones are Motorola, so they bought Motorola for, I think, $12.5 million.
Yeah, but
billion.
Doesn't Motorola kind of make the worst droid phones? Everyone told me, if you're going to buy a phone, don't buy a Motorola.
I used to feel that way about Motorola. The droid one seems to work fine. It glitches occasionally, but from what I've heard, it doesn't glitch really any more often than any of the other ones.
Okay.
But anyway, they decided to buy Motorola, and Motorola decided to sell out to them so that they will now have the hardware on the software in at least one phone type.
Very cool.
which could be the beginning of a very nice union and could be the beginning of Google becoming the worldwide monopoly. So you decide.
Hmm. How many years do you think it will take Google to buy Microsoft?
I don't think that will happen.
Wouldn't that be like the ultimate technology partnership?
Maybe.
I think they're rivals.
Hmm. Yeah,
you know,
they are.
Because of the Internet Explorer,
Google
versus
Chrome.
Yeah. Hmm. I don't think they're friendly with each other.
And I don't think Google would want Microsoft because it's sort of shit.
Sorry, Alex. No, my thing is that, I mean, what does the company have on the horizon? Like, what's their 10-year plan? They probably have a new 360. Are they still going to be in the phone market? Doubtful. Zoom's not going to see that. You know, OS. I see a lot of people. They're losing a lot of people in the OS market.
Basically, no one uses their OS who knows how to either do Linux or operate a sort of off-brand OS. I mean, there's, like, no reason to have Microsoft unless you don't know how to Linux it up.
You use Linux?
No, but I really respect people who do. No, because I don't spend enough time playing with computers to be that savvy with them.
Okay.
But I mean, it'd be cool, too. Like, someday if I have the time, I would invest in not being on a Microsoft OS because I don't find them particularly wonderful.
I used Linux, and I could do everything except get my printer driver to work. That was like a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
and,
no, drivers are tough.
Yeah, but every other thing could work and connect properly. It was just my printer driver. It was a pain in the ass. So that was a couple of years ago. It's probably all fixed up now.
Probably. Anyway.
Enough Microsoft hating for one night.
Right.
So, no wonder why we never get invited to their trade shows.
Whatever, we didn't start this till after we stopped getting invited.
We didn't start the fire.
That's going to sound retaliatory. So, I still love you, Bill Gates.
Good for you.
Yes. So, see you guys next week. We love you, too.
Bye. Peace.
Bye.
So toast it. Oh, fuck me.